You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 100.5 FM.
Between 2006 and 2008, average world prices for rice rose by 217%. And in staple after staple, we're seeing the same pattern of steep price increases. The large companies which trade in food argue that this is because of natural causes like drought. But there is increasing evidence that speculation may be a major factor. Sophia Murphy works as a consultant and senior advisor on agricultural trade and governance issues with the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. She's co-author of a new research report, Cereal Secrets, The World's Largest Grain Traders and Global Agriculture. She spoke with Red Eye Collective member Sean Mullen earlier this week. Sean began by asking her about the four big companies that dominate the world grain market.
They're known as the A, B, C, D, which makes it easy to remember their names. A is for Archer Daniels Midland, B is for Bungie, C is for Cargill, and D is for Dreyfus, Louis Dreyfus. They're grain companies that three of the four, not ADM, but the B, C, D of the group, are all between 150 and older, 150 years and older. And they were set up in different parts of the world, in Europe, in the U.S., Bungie, more in Latin America. And they've been trading grain all those years. ADM came on as a global player in the 1970s, but it was also one of the big American grain firms before that. And they are, between them, responsible for an estimated 75 to 90% of the global grain trade. There aren't clear numbers because it's not a transparent business. It's difficult to know exactly who has which contracts and how big the contracts are. That's guarded as proprietary knowledge. But they are, especially in the traditional commodities that dominate our food supply, rice and corn and wheat, they are the dominant traders. They buy it from the farmers. They often process it themselves in different subsidiary organizations. And then they sell it on to consumers or to processing companies like Nestle or Unilever.
When three or four companies control a given market, what kind of power do they exercise over, you know, farmers and suppliers and so forth?
Well, it's one of the ways to imagine it is a bit like an hourglass. So you think of, you know, sort of wide base, that's a lot of farmers, and then this narrowing where the four traders sit, and it's a fairly long waist in your hourglass because they do more than one thing on the way between a farm growing the grain and the consumer finally consuming it. And then you have a very wide top to this hourglass with all the consumers. And so at the choke point, it's a bit like having the only boat that crosses a river. Everyone who needs to get to the other side has to go to that one ferry to get over, and the ferry can charge what they like. Now, the companies clearly compete with one another, and it's what's called an oligopoly in economics. It's not like being the only provider of a service. The four of them have to compete with one another. But evidently, it's very difficult for anyone new to come in and set up a business, you know, to run their own boat, if you like, across the river. Because of their advantages of scale, because their advantage of being already present in so many countries, they have enormous knowledge of the grain sector, and it's an expensive business, huge capital requirements to operate the barges and rail cars, to operate the grain terminals where the grain is stored. There are very large barriers to entry into this market, and so that means that if you're an individual farmer looking to sell your grain, you don't have many choices of who to sell to. It's going to be one of the big four, and for most farmers, it's actually one of them. It's not as if everywhere a farmer might sell grain. There's just these four companies sitting there ready to buy. Sometimes it's just one of them or two of them. And it means in the futures market, where U.S. farmers sell their grain, I think Canadian farmers some too, although the wheat board, it's in transition in Canada with the end of the wheat board. But where you sell in the futures market, those grain companies also have an enormous advantage over others who are buying and selling the contracts for grain because they have so much control of the supply, know so much about what the market is doing, and so are able to anticipate which way prices are going to move up or down much better than any individual farmer.
And are these large trading companies, the A, B, C, D, trading companies, as you've termed them, are they involved in any other aspects of agriculture, or do they just stick with trading, buying and then selling the grain?
Well, in the report, we outline their role in finance, and what one of the things that we wanted to bring to the fore in the report was the importance of these companies in the financial side of agriculture, which has grown significantly in importance in the last 10 years or so. And so that's the role of the futures market and the trading that goes on among people who aren't actually trying to buy or sell grain, but are trying to make money as the price of grain changes up or down in the commodity market. And all four of those traders, as we document in the report, have developed important financial subsidiaries that are purely engaged in that financial speculation rather than in the sort of physical side of things where you move grain from one place to another to an actual buyer of grain. Within the agriculture system itself, they are also very dominant. They take Cargill, which is perhaps the biggest of the four. They're involved in seed production, they're involved in fertilizer, they're involved in shipping, they're involved in livestock, so in using the grain in order to feed to animals and produce meat for the market. They have a very broad role in the agriculture system that extends well beyond just grain.
In your report, you argue that prices have gone up. What evidence do we have that speculation is playing a role in the rise of food prices?
Well, it's certainly a controversial area. I think the way I understand it, and it's certainly complicated to both explain and understand, is that the speculation has played a part, especially in the short run. It doesn't in the long term change the supply and demand of actual food. But in the short run, it's clearly caused what they call overruns, where the speculation will drive prices higher than they need to go and then may cause them to fall lower than they need to go as well. And to some extent, that's normal in the market, but it seems to have been quite exaggerated with the increase in speculation. So for a long time, the commodity markets were managed in such a way that the speculative part was limited to something like 20% of the total value of the market, and the rest was hedging. That was actual farmers, actual buyers of grain, who were using the futures market in order to lock in a price in advance and avoid some of the risk of a price shooting up or a price collapsing come harvest time. And that's a very useful function in the commodity market. With the deregulation of commodity markets starting in around 2000, you see a huge increase in the speculative capital, where those who are trying to understand from the futures market what prices ought to be and where prices are headed are distracted by the operations of various kinds of investors, few of them interested in whether there really is enough food or not, and most of them just trying to guess one day to the next what might happen, or even one minute to the next, what might happen to the price of grain or of a given commodity.
I'm wondering about deregulation and the role that deregulation has played in all of this. We know that in banking, for example, that the crisis of 2007-2008 was caused in large measure by the deregulation of the financial industry. What role has deregulation played in the current surge in food prices?
It's partly that it's allowed the banks to get more involved in what would have traditionally been a kind of in the grain traders' business, and it's allowed the grain traders to get more involved in what traditionally would have been more a banking business. So there's been this blurring of who does what and what kinds of rules ought to apply to them. From the grain traders' point of view, they've been able to engage in more speculation, but on the grounds that they also hedge, they've been protected in that role and not subject to the same constraints that were there for the speculators. The thing with the financial deregulation is also that we've introduced a lot of new financial instruments like derivatives, which caused so much trouble in the wider financial crisis in 2008. And those derivatives are also created in agricultural commodities. And so you get an increasing opacity, you could say, a loss of transparency in what's going on, because people aren't entirely clear what's bundled into the derivatives. And it has a real effect on the cost of those commodities, which, you know, in many parts of the world is their food supply. that transparency in price is lost because of the confusion or the, I think honestly a lot of people just don't understand what they're trading with some of the new instruments now in the financial markets.
Oh, you mentioned the blurring, I mean, of or the lack of transparency. How has this blurring come about? What specific rules have changed so that we can't really see clearly what's happening in these trades?
I'm not sure that I can answer the question, as clearly as you'd like. I mean, I think for me, some of the blurring comes with the creation of a lot of instruments that are not that well understood by the traders. Some of the blurring comes from removing the restrictions on how much of a share of the entire market can be taken up with pure speculation. And so a lot of people who aren't really interested in the grain trade at all get involved in futures markets and confuse the picture, if you like, just with the scale of the trading going on. And then the fact that the traders are now able to engage as investment firms. They'll take money from third parties and invest on their behalf in commodities and agriculture. That's something that they're doing at the same time. They claim there's a firewall. I'm sure legally there's a firewall, but it's still true that they're operating. They're obviously selling themselves as people who know everything there is to know about the grain business. And so it's a bit like insider trading. They're operating on both sides of that, what should be, a very clear divide. And so in offering their services as a financial advisor and being able to work with the knowledge they have as traders in the market, they then have a huge edge, of course, on any other investor who's trying to guess which way prices might go.
One interesting idea that I've heard suggested as a way of avoiding these price fluctuations is that farmers can keep a stock of grain or corn or whatever so that it reduces the stress on the market. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I'm very interested in the notion of stocks. I think one of the reasons we've seen so much volatility and one of the reasons why the financial markets are the commodity futures markets are so important is because there's no other place that grain is being held, as it were. Those futures contracts are sort of all there is, and they're the promise of what might come. They're not actual grain in store. So the U.S. program, I believe, introduced in 1985 and then eliminated, a decade or so later, was about trying to... Initially, the government had held stocks, and that was found to be too expensive, and they ran up very large supplies as well. And so, in a way, they decentralized it and gave farmers a payment to hold some stock. And I believe there are commodities, specific commodities, for which there are still farmer payments for farmers to hold some reserve. It's a way to manage the price, to avoid gluts at harvest time, and to have some kind of public call on a supply should there be a shortfall. And I know that it has the strong support of a lot of farm organizations in the U.S. as an idea. I think there are different ways to think about how the stocks are held, but from the work I've done, I'm persuaded that the private sector is not interested in holding stocks. And although it's true if the public sector holds stocks, those firms maybe hold less stock than they would otherwise, I'm not sure that that's such a big loss, because it's clear that without any public reserve, the private companies still keep very little in reserve themselves.
These companies that you mentioned, these large grain traders, their political clout, I would imagine, is quite enormous. Given that, what possibility do you see for reforming the system as it currently exists?
Well, it's I guess when you look at it historically, there tends to be shifts towards allowing companies more free rein, and then to curbing back their power somewhat. And so I know it's perfectly possible to curb their power, and I would argue that we need to. I think that a shift to something more like utility management would make sense, where, for example, when we get electricity or water provided to us, we don't have competing suppliers coming to our door offering to run a pipe in. We deal with a monopoly, and the monopoly is regulated so that it makes a reasonable profit, but there's a public oversight ensuring that it's not an excessive profit. And I think that those aspects of this business are not the same, and it wouldn't be like a monopoly, but it would be something like that regulated for the oligopoly and acknowledged that there are huge barriers to entry, and therefore there needs to be more public oversight of the sector, because it's not openly competitive and therefore not able to work just within a market-based system.
And that was Sophia Murphy in conversation with Red Eye Collective member Sean Mullen. Sophia works as a consultant and senior advisor on agricultural trade and governance issues with the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. She's co-author of a new research report, Cereal Secrets, The World's Largest Grain Traders and Global Agriculture. And you can find that report on the Oxfam site, oxfam.org.